You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Elevated Faith, the maker of modern jewelry and apparel that gives back to Christian organizations around the globe. Now, let's get into today's show.
Hey guys, this is Jared. Welcome to this episode of the podcast. I am excited to have my new good friend, Ben Corson, with me today. Ben, how are you doing, man?
We are good friends. We've known each other for a week and we're already good friends. Like everyone, we always talk about this, but everyone always tells us you guys have to meet each other. And we finally did over the phone. And the only time I've seen you is watching you on YouTube and Instagram, and you're absolutely killing the game. So I'm glad we finally get to get this podcast. For the listeners who don't know, we've tried this multiple times.
Exactly.
And I've had technology failures, so it's finally happening.
Technology has been incredible, but we are finally here. Ben, it's been fun to get to know you over the last couple of weeks, man. We have all these friends and acquaintances that keep saying, dude, you guys need to meet each other. I feel like you guys are both like, you guys would just mesh so well. You're both crazy energetic and love Jesus. I'm like, cool. I guess let's meet this guy. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, dude. It's like a perfect storm of Tigger on steroids. You know,
exactly. It's lived awesome. Up to the hype as well.
I'm definitely stoked to know you, man. Yeah, I'm stoked to know you too. And I'm glad we're making this happen, homie.
No, me too, bro. Man, there's so much going on in your life. You know, you got a new book coming out. I've seen that you've written other books before. You're a speaker. You're doing all these incredible things for the gospel, man, for the sake of the local church. But for those people that don't know you or maybe don't follow you yet, because I'm sure they will after they listen to you talk on this podcast episode, because you're awesome. Why don't you share a little bit about yourself, kind of just who you are, where you live, what you're doing right now, and all the other details.
Yeah, I'm actually currently in Orange County, California, probably not too far from you, but I have to go to San Diego in a sec. So that's why I'm doing this like quick Orange County tour and book tour. But I actually live in Oregon. So I did my first sermon when I was in third grade at the ripe old age of like 9 or 8 years old or whatever. And I just got up and taught the Valley of the Dry Bones as a third grader from Ezekiel. But all I did was I just read the text and then sat down. And it was probably the best sermon I ever gave because I didn't muddy it with my own comments. It was just like the word never returns void. So
they're like, wow, he's such a great expositor of scripture. You're like, dude, that's all I knew.
That's all I do, dude. I just let the word speak for itself. So that was
he just sticks to the text. You're like, dude, that's all I knew.
that's all I knew. I didn't have any insight as an 8-year old into the Valley of the Dry Bones from an obscure text in Ezekiel.
Which is an epic passage, dude. One of my favorite. I mean, there's so much application and there's so much depth in those passages, man. So that's a good one to choose.
That's probably it's funny you say that because that's probably the story that turned me on to reading the Bible like by myself. So
Makes sense. Went
from like, you know, my family teaching me the Bible to like reading it myself. I thought this is it's very much like a scene from The Lion King, you know, where like the Valley of the Bones in Lion King, it just felt like that. And I'm like, this is way more entertaining and it's way more like darkly mysterious. Like the bones come to life. It's like the undead or something. So I got really stoked about it in third grade. And then I started teaching regularly at 16 years old in Costa Mesa and started traveling and speaking. And then at 18,
where were you speaking in Costa Mesa?
I was speaking, sometimes I'd fill in for my dad at Calvary Costa Mesa on Tuesday night Bible study. And I would also, I started a Bible study at my house and me and my friends were teaching it as teenagers. And then at 18 years old, I became a pastor and I've been doing it ever since.
So did your dad used to be on staff at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa?
He did. He was
there
for 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went to high school in Orange County. Every time I come to Orange County, I just feel like I'm at home.
Oh, yeah, man. I think we've got some mutual friends, the Denham sisters, who our family loves, and you know them and a bunch of other people that are on staff at Harvest. I mean, this circle, while being very big, is also very small. It feels small. It's a close-knit family.
Know.
But I had no clue that your dad was on staff at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. For those of you guys that are like, what's going on? What are they talking about? Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa is a Calvary Chapel church within the Costa Mesa area. It's actually where Harvest Christian Fellowship, the church that I'm on staff at with Pastor Greg Laurie, kind of came out of. We were at one time Calvary Chapel Riverside, and now we're Harvest Christian Fellowship. So all that to say, it's cool to see how we're still connected, man, in such a crazy way.
Yeah, and I'm actually, I'm speaking for the Harvest College in, like, I think a month or something. So we're all interconnected.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I think you're doing something for the SoCal Crusade that we've got going on, I think you said. So there's a lot of cool things happening, man. So, I mean, you stepped into speaking pretty early. Your dad being a pastor, right? Your dad's name is?
John Corson.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know who John Corson is, actually your parents might know who John Corson is. John Corson is a prolific speaker and a writer and a well-known pastor. Growing up in a pastor's home, did you feel the pressure to become a pastor as a PK, also known as a pastor's kid, for those of you guys that don't know what a PK is?
Are you a PK too, Jared?
I'm not, man. I'm the first pastor of my family.
Wow. Okay. Well, you seem like you would have a pastoral family because your knowledge of the scriptures is so deep. So you just did it all yourself though, dude. That's sick.
Well, I didn't, you know, I came into ministry and pastoring with this blank canvas, which for some people might be a bad thing, but for me, it was kind of this exciting journey of going, okay, I'm the first person in my family to really step into pastoral ministry. Mind you, I grew up in a Christian family, so I had people, my mom and my dad, they're serving at church, you know, they're leading a Sunday school class for kids. So I had family that was doing ministry and knew what it meant to be part of a local church. But none of us, no one in my family had ever been on staff at a church or was a pastor or ordained as a pastor. So I was like the first one of my family. So I didn't feel any pressure to do this. This is really something I felt called to do, which is, if you ask anyone who knew me in high school, I barely graduated high school. So all of them are like, wait, Jared, that dude's a pastor now? I'm like, yeah, no, I know. It's as weird as it sounds. But did you feel like pressured at all to ever become a pastor and like a speaker and a writer because your dad was? Because a lot of people would go, oh, well, yeah, he's just got to continue what his dad did. Or did you feel like, no, this is a decision I'm making on my own?
Yeah, I think my dad really hit it on the head when he was talking to my brother, Peter John, who's also a pastor. And my brother was wondering that as well. And my dad said, Peter, you're not a preacher because you're a Corson. He said, you're a Corson because you were meant to be a preacher.
That's awesome.
And that really made it click for me and my brother that, you know, it's not like even how God set it up in the Bible, you might call it nepotism, but it was Aaron and his sons who were the priests. And I think there's something to that. Like when you have this sort of inheritance and heritage of getting handed the scriptures from a young age, it gives you this like deep, steeping in the scriptures that you carry on with you into your adulthood. Originally, I wanted to be like Reggie White, who was a football player. He was an NFL football player, and he was a pastor. And I'm like, that's what I want to do. So even from it, even since I was a little kid, like I wanted to be a speaker.
But how tall are you?
I'm only 6'2", dude. So that was a pipe dream.
Wait,
that was
dude, I have a funny story about that. So I'm 6'2 as well. I probably weigh like a buck 70, a buck 80. But when I was in high school, I was playing soccer, right? And then I had this football coach come over to me and a bunch of the kids playing soccer. He's like,
"Hey, you're a kicker."
Even worse. He's all, "You're fast. I need some wide receivers." I'm like, "Dude, I will die if I play football. There's no way I can." I am
no
too
way,
skinny to play football, bro. So, mind you, I never played football, but all that to say.
I thought that no way. Like, I've not heard of that before. Usually the football coach goes to the soccer team and always recruits kickers.
Oh, he had that too, but he's like trying to get wide receivers. I'm like, dude, look at me. I look like I'm still in middle school. There's no way I'm playing on a high school football team.
Oh, gosh, dude. Yeah, that's me too, Jared. Like me wanting to play in the NFL was just an absolute pipe dream. But even in the midst of that, I still wanted to speak. I still wanted to do what I'm doing. And then when I was 16 years old, I saw that like these guys were trying to make the 24-hour fitness Hall of Fame when I went to the gym, and they were like 40 years old. And I had this flash forward vision, premonitory moment where I'm like, oh gosh, this is going to be my future. I'm going to be 40 years old playing basketball at 24-hour fitness, trying to make it into the 24-hour fitness Hall of Fame. And that's not what I want. Like, I don't want that. So I decided I'm not going to be like a human pizza and divide myself into so many different compartments. Like Paul, I love what he said. One thing I do, forgetting what's behind. Or David said, one thing if I desire the Lord to see the Lord's beauty. Or Jesus said, one thing is needful. Mary's chosen the better part. Or even to the rich young ruler, one thing you lack, you know, sell everything you have and give it to the poor. This one thing mentality is something that the Lord instilled in me at a young age to just focus on one thing. And that's when I kind of put sports out of the equation as something I really wanted to follow and more just focused solely on the ministry. So I'm glad you did too, dude. I'm glad you didn't go play football. The world needed your voice. So I'm glad you chose to be a speaker.
Dude, I wouldn't have made it a day on a football team, man. But similar, I mean, my whole trajectory of life was, hey, I'm going to play soccer professionally. You know, I was talking about some scholarships, potential colleges to go to after I graduated high school. I'm like, hey, I'm probably good enough to play MLS, probably not good enough to play European League. But that was like my plan, bro. And long story short, when I was like 16, sophomore year of high school, snapped my ankle, almost had my leg amputated. So literally, dude, my whole life plan was gone. And it was literally in that brokenness and in that mess and in that pile of rubbish that God stepped in and was like, hey, I'm going to redeem the circumstance. And you thought you were going to be, you know, some soccer athlete guy. Instead, I'm going to raise you up to be a pastor that encourages people and offers hope and dispenses grace through the gospel of Jesus. And to me, that was just the last thing I ever expected to happen. But oftentimes God works that way. The last thing you ever expected to happen happens, and it's for your benefit, and God knew best. And so that's just so cool to hear, man. So you never felt pressure to be a pastor. So what was the moment that was like, okay, this is what I'm called to do, not just because I'm a courser, but because this is what God has instilled in my heart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, walking with God just saved my life. Like you, Jared, I mean, you have such a passion for the Lord. And when he rescues you, it's like if you found the cure to HIV or you found the Nepenthe or panacea to cancer, you're going to shout that thing from the rooftops. And people might ask us, like, you know, Jared, why are you so passionate? Or Ben, why are you so enthusiastic? It's because we found the cure. And when you found the cure, when you feel this real hope, dude, I'm looking out the window right now, just overlooking Southern California. I've had these because it was in high school that I really started owning my faith in a way that I never had before. Kind of like Josiah, when he became king at 8, it wasn't until he was 16 that he sought the Lord of his own accord. It was when I was about 16 that I really started, like, I would just, you know, go to the beach before school, or I would go to the Metro Point and I would just like sit there with my Bible and praying. And I read the story of all the kings. And that's weirdly, it was Second Chronicles that just wrecked me. Like Second Chronicles, the stories of the kings showed me that if you walk with God, things go good. If you don't walk with God, things go bad. And so I'm like, to me, that was my understanding at the time. And so I'm like trying to get everybody to walk with God. I'm like, guys, trust me, life is so much better. Life is so much more sending when you just walk with God. So, and really, obviously, all these kings had tribulations as well. Jesus said, yeah, that you'll have tribulation. It's not that we're not going to go through our times, but on our worst day with God, we're better off than on our best day without God. So when we're going through our worst, God's planning his best. And I think when I started realizing that walking with God was so much more fun. Fun is fundamental than being anywhere else. That was the moment where I'm like, I got to tell all my friends about this.
Well, there's this preconceived idea that, oh, once you become a Christian, life is no longer fun. I'm like, no, man, once you become a Christian, who cares about fun? Life is fulfilling. But then again, it's also fun. Man, I'm telling you, if you ever spent time with a group of 16, 17 people who are on fire from Jesus, don't get me wrong, there's bound to be some weirdos in the group, and that makes it fun.
Yeah, dude.
Christianity is fun, man.
If you want to be number one, you have to be odd. If you want to be number one, you have to be on. So if there's some weird, it does actually, you can either see it as an ordeal or an adventure. I agree, dude.
Exactly,
it makes it way,
man.
Way fun.
And I'm sure I've been that weirdo in a group every once in a while. Here's the thing. You and I are, like you said, Tigger on steroids, man. I know. I've got energy. I know I'm a little too much for some people, but it's like, dude, I've experienced this grace and this newfound life because of Jesus, and help me God if I'm not excited to share about it. I mean, come on. Like you said, it's like finding that treatment or that answer to the question that everyone's been looking for. It's like, why wouldn't you just shout it from the rooftops? And so I love that. You and I have that same passion, man. I mean, I don't understand people who don't have that passion for Jesus. I'm like, there's no such thing, in my opinion, of someone who's encountered Jesus yet does not have passion for the person who died on a splintered piece of wood called the cross for you. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break to hear from a sponsor. In 2015, just weeks after dropping out of college, my friend Josh Gander found himself struggling and trying to find his purpose in the world. Countless amount of hours had already gone into his latest failed business, and his frustration was at a boiling point. See, Josh knew he wanted to use his passion to influence people, but he was struggling, like many of us, to find the road forward. It was in this valley that God gave him the adventure of a lifetime, bracelets. Yes, my friends, you heard me correctly, bracelets of all things. So he got to work crafting jewelry and apparel that could help believers share their faith. 3 years later, my friends, tens of thousands of people are wearing Elevated Faith. Items like bracelets, hoodies, rings, and t-shirts. Long gone are the days of cheesy Christian apparel. Elevated Faith offers modern jewelry and apparel that makes easy conversation starters to help you share your faith. They also give 10% of all their profits to Christian charities around the world, so that's pretty awesome. So right now is the time where you stop what you're doing and you visit elevatedfaith.com. Literally stop what you're doing and go to elevatedfaith.com and use the code Jared25 to receive 25% off your order.
Have you ever felt like everyone was depending on you? Family, friends, coworkers, and everyone in between? That was the exhaustion that Lisa was living in while trying to be the perfect wife, mother, and businesswoman. When Lisa Leonard said her marriage vows, she was determined to be the best wife she could be. When her first son was born with a severe disability, she promised herself she would always be the mother he needed. When she began her jewelry business, Lisa committed to giving it her all, but she knew it wasn't working. She wanted to change things, but how? So she kept going, kept pushing, kept trying to prove she could do it all. Until one evening, in tears and desperation, Lisa realized that she could no longer be everything to everyone. Somewhere along the way, she'd lost herself. In her new book, Brave Love, released this month from our friends at Zondervan, Lisa shares her story of finding truth and wholeness in the midst of life's competing demands. Brave Love is about what it means to be human, how it feels to be broken and afraid, and what happens when we dare to love deeply. Join Lisa on a journey where you will discover you are worthy and lovable just as you are. Officially releasing on January 29th, but available now for pre-order everywhere you buy books. Now, back to the show.
So you came into your own of being a pastor. You're like, no, I'm not just doing this because I'm John Corson's son. I'm doing this because I'm Ben Corson, and God has called me for such time as this to be a pastor, to be a dispenser of hope and grace to people. And so that journey has opened up a lot of opportunities for you, man. I mean, I will brag on you for a second because I don't want you to have to do it, because then it'll come off maybe as prideful. So I'm going to do it for you.
I'm like,
man, you're traveling around the world. You're sharing messages of hope to people who need to hear it. You've written a few books. Your newest one, which is called Off the Misfits, we'll talk about in just a second. You're currently on the Hillsong Channel, which I assume reaches millions of people around the world. I mean, dude, God really has his hand upon your life. And here's the thing, and I want to encourage you. I think oftentimes there may be this little thing in the back of our heads that's going, well, am I just doing this? Are people just allowing me to do this because I'm John Corson's son? Dude, Ben, that is not the case at all, bro. I've seen your messages. I've talked to you in person. If you were not good at what you do, if you were not gifted at what you do, people would not put you up there, man. And so this is just me encouraging you. Your writing and the way in which you speak, which is very different, much like myself, I speak in a different way, in a different, I don't even know how to explain it, just a different style than most. And dude, God has his hand on your life, and it's because you're Ben Corson, not because you're John Corson's son. So I just want to give you that encouragement right now in case
you
need it, man.
Dude, thank you so much.
Well,
thank you for your kind words, man. Like, you're just such an encourager. And honestly, I think if we can give people encouragement, nourishment, like one of my favorite characters in the book of Acts is Barnabas, because he was just a son of comfort. And I love how you do that, Jared. You're an encourager, man. And that's what I want to be. I want to be an encourager too. And I love that word encourage, because in English, it comes from the French roots, encourager, which literally means encourage. So
yeah,
encouraging someone doesn't just mean you're giving them a serotonin overflow of fuzzy feelings. It means like you're actually putting them in courage. Or even the word comfort. The word comfort comes from the roots come, which means with, and fort, which is where we get our word fortitude, fortis, or fortress. So it means with strength. So when you're giving people comfort, it means you are empowering them and enabling them, ennobling them, equipping them to live with strength. And when you encourage them, you're putting them in courage. So that's why, dude, I think like some people assume that encouraging people is just unicorns shooting rainbows out of their eyes, robustly flavored donuts of fun. But the truth is, like, you're actually putting people
did
in
you
courage.
Just say robustly donuts? Wait, what?
Robustly flavored donuts of fun.
Robustly flavored donuts of fun.
Yeah,
okay,
dude,
going.
That's
sorry.
That's what people assume. I'm glad you paused it there so people could really take in how awesome that sentence is.
Robustly flavored donuts of fun.
I wish I could claim to be the author of said aphorism, but I actually didn't make it up. I stole it from a friend.
I love that.
The originality is the art of concealing your sources.
Yeah.
You know? So Picasso said, good artists copy, great artists steal. So just, steal from the best and make your own. But people think that about encouragement. They're like, oh, yeah, it's just like fluffy and, you know, raining jelly beans and Skittles and stuff. And I like to encourage people. Actually, when you give people hope, the word hope in Greek in the New Testament is elpis. It means joyful, confident welcome. You're giving them a joyful confidence whereby they welcome the miracles of God into their life, because that's what gives them belief and faith, which is the substance of things hoped for. So hope is the very engine of our faith. So without hope, without encouragement, without comfort, we're not going to go as far into our destiny as we otherwise could have.
Agreed, man. Dude, it's so encouraging. And I love just your heart and your passion for helping lost people become found in the presence of God, man. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, that's what wakes me up in the morning. It's what keeps my wife and I up at night when we're talking about, you know, ministry ideas and this and that and this project and, you know, something we can do at Harvest to reach these people. And so I love it, man. But just as we kind of make our way towards the end of our call here, we got about 10 minutes. I really want to talk about this new book that you're coming out with, because that's important, man. That's a huge deal. For any of you that have written a book before, you know, writing a book is a tedious, hard undertaking. A lot of tears, a lot of frustration, a lot of joy, a lot of excitement, a lot of I can't do this, a lot of I was born to do this. But all that to say, Optimisfits, your new book. Can you please explain to everybody listening what your new book is about? Maybe, you know, when it comes out, maybe how they can get it. But yeah, give the details of what it's about.
Yeah, but before I do that, dude, who did you publish Jesus Swagger with? What publishing company was it?
So Jesus Swagger was with Thomas Nelson.
Sick.
Yeah, Love is Oxygen was with NavPress/Tyndale. And then my first two books, which were devotionals, were with a really cool imprint called Kirkdale Press. Born out of Logos Bible software. And so really Kirkdale Press, with my first two devotionals, those are the first two things I ever wrote. Kirkdale Press really were the people who opened their arms to me and said, hey, we would love to take a chance on you and share your heart for loving Jesus and the writing that you have. So it was really cool. So it's all kind of built its way to where I am now. But
well,
yeah,
that's great, so. Dude, because you understand the process and you understand that it's not as easy as it might look, and that you like are such a great communicator, and you know that process. And I'm actually with Harvest House, which I believe Greg Laurie's with. I know he's published them before.
Greg's publishing books from Harvest House. His newest book, which is Jesus Revolution, is with Baker. And dude, it is, I mean, because of your dad and because of the movement that he was part of as well with Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa and then what is now all these other church plants and other churches, you got to read it, man. It's incredible. So all that to say,
fire. Yeah, dude. So sorry, we're just talking shop for a sec. If anyone out there is interested in publishing, they might perk their ears up. But otherwise, what are they talking about? But yeah, basically, Optimisfits is the word Optimisfit is a made up word. It's a mixture of optimistic, misfit.
So is Jesus Swagger, by the way.
There you go, dude. It's not any. It's not in any place in the Bible. It's not in like 2 Opinionians 2:8-18. Neither is Optimisfits. So Optimisfits, it means optimistic misfit. It describes a person who's a nonconformist adventurer who lives with wild abandon, childlike wonder, and unapologetic optimism. So it's really a book about igniting a fierce rebellion against hopelessness. As a PK, a lot of people say, did you ever have a rebellious period? And I say, no, but I'm in it now, only I'm not going to rebel against something. I'm going to rebel toward something. When people think of rebellion, they think of what am I against? But I'm saying, what if we started a rebellion where we're known by what we're for, a rebellion toward hope in a generation that, you know, commits suicide once every 40 seconds.
Yeah.
Like what if we started a rebellion?
It's Romans 12:2. It's Romans 12:2. Don't conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That's obviously found in Jesus. It's exactly what you're saying, man. I love it.
Yeah. And I try to paint Jesus as a hopeful rebel. I mean, he pitted himself against the assembled might of Jewish orthodoxy. There were 6,000 Pharisees, and he took them all on literally single-handedly. He went up against the establishment of the Roman Empire that colluded with Judaism to crucify him because he was, for example, 7 times in 4 Gospels healing on the Sabbath when that was considered illegal. And he was doing things that didn't go according to the traditions of men. What he was doing is starting a new new rebellion against the religiosity, churchianity, despair that was created by the oppressive environment of his day. So what the book is about is it's part memoir where I tell the stories of a lot of adventures with me and my friends. And skateboarding is a major theme because that's something we're all really passionate about. And as a symbol, I think it's very powerful. But if we can be anti-establishment and anarchic in a way that is rebelling toward hope and beauty, rather than being known as pessimist fits where we're like cynical and jaded, the goal of an optimist fit is to become more and more like a child, which Jesus said is the embodiment of the kingdom itself. So, yeah. That's what Optimistic is about. It's really a book devoted to people who need hope. And it's devoted to people who want to live for a living and be professional fun havers because we have means but no meaning. We have enough to live by but not enough to live for. So I want to give people that hope. And yeah, so it comes out March 19th and people can just order it at my website or on Amazon or at Barnes & Noble like whenever they want. It's available to pre-order. Yeah.
I think it's incredible. I love what you say. We always – you know, rebellion, we think of as such a negative thing, you know, like, when I was 16, I rebelled against my parents. I was far from God. You know, we think about the wayward child. He rebelled against his father. He went into the world. But never do we really hear, unless we're talking about Jesus, which I've heard multiple pastors say, like Jesus was a worldly rebel. He was a cultural rebel. He rebelled against what the world saw as normal. And he said, no, I'm sorry, this isn't right. This is where I'm going. And what you see as, you know, rebellion, I see as me chasing light. And so I love that, man. I think it's powerful. Honestly, I think it's an ideology that's so simple, yet it's so impactful once you start to, you know, bring out the layers, which is what this book is going to be. So I'm excited for it, man. Well, let me ask you, what encouraged you to write this? I mean, here's the thing. For people who have written books before, anyone who's listening, you know, there's a million ideas that come into your head. Why this one?
Well, first of all, I didn't want to write a book. I had self-published, or I should say I went through my dad's ministry with my first three books when I was 20 years old, 21 and 22. And then
still a huge accomplishment, by the way.
But then I I'm like, now I see why people don't write books when they're 19 and 20, because there's a reason for that. So I'm like, I'm going to wait. And what I did is for 7 years, I was finishing up my fantasy trilogy, just like a fantasy novel trilogy. And then I'm like, I'm going to wait. And then about a year and a half ago, a guy from Harvest recruited me. So I didn't have an agent looking for a book deal. Like the publishing company actually came to me and said, hey, we want you to write a book. And I'm like, I know just the thing.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah, because honestly, dude, I lived in isolation for so long, and that is such a tendency for leaders to fall into. And then my friends brought me out of isolation into infiltration, because a lot of people think they want to disappear when what they really want is just to be found. And ultimately, like, if you want to go, you know, it's been said, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And life is so much better together when you're going on adventures with God, adventures with squad. For me, that was something that literally God used to rescue me from my 10 years of chronic depression. And I wanted to share this with the world because I believe it can help many others out of depression as well.
I love that, man. And, you know, you and I have talked a little bit about this. That's what my book, Love is Oxygen, is about, was kind of God infiltrating the brokenness of my life and giving me hope in what seemed like a hopeless situation called depression. I mean, I was at a point of, you know, Googling painless ways to commit suicide at the top of this place called Skyline over here in Corona area in my car, just like not wanting to live anymore, man. It's just the reality. And at the time, the church, and I think you would agree on this, the church is becoming much more fluent in our conversation regarding mental health.
But that's right,
10,
dude.
10 years that's ago, right. It was still so taboo that I didn't feel comfortable sharing with anybody, because I thought people were going to say, well, sorry, you don't have enough faith. I'm like, no, it's not that simple. And obviously I knew something 10 years ago that much of the church is finally coming into today. But dude, I love that you're writing about this, because there are people all around the world who are struggling with depression, crippling depression, mind you, crippling anxiety and worry and fear. And you feel like you're at the bottom of this pit and there's no way out. Yet here comes Jesus to give you that hope and to give you that restoration. It doesn't mean it'll happen overnight. For some people, it does. For some people, it does. I mean, I've met plenty of people who have said, man, you know, I was dealing with this addiction or this or that or depression, and literally at the snap of a finger, Jesus freed me from it, and I'm stepping into freedom. Like, that's incredible. How it happened with me was that Jesus didn't necessarily rid me of depression, but he rid me of the lies that I used to believe about myself in regards to depression. So he gave me
that's so important. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm stoked that you're writing this, man. I'm just stoked you're writing this, man. I mean, we could literally, if we wanted to, honestly, let's plan on doing it in maybe another month or so or a couple weeks. Let's plan on doing a podcast on mental health, dude. I think it would be awesome just to talk about it from a Christian perspective. But I'm pumped that you're writing this book, man. It needs to be written.
Well, I think that, dude, there's so many things I want to talk about with mental health. Maybe we'll do like a part two sometime on mental health, because you're saying so many insightful things. I was speaking at Calvary Test last night and literally had this exact conversation with a guy where it used to be taboo to talk about depression among, you know, people who went to church. But it's like, Psalm 42 said, why are you cast down on my soul? David said, my sins and troubles are more number than the hairs of my head. He struggled with depression. Elijah was nearly suicidal. Job said, Jonah wanted to literally ask the Lord to kill him. And then ultimately, Abraham Lincoln walked through the woods with a shotgun by himself, tempted to commit suicide. Winston Churchill wouldn't live on a higher balcony at his flat in his apartment because he didn't want to fling himself over the edge when desperate thoughts come into his head.
Yeah.
He faced the black dog of depression, Spurgeon with his gout, and preachers fainting fits. Like, whoever you want to talk about, this first-rate madness is sometimes like the person's oddity is their commodity, their weakness is their strength. One more quick thing about that. Alfred Adler at the turn of the 20th century did a study where he found that 70% of the art students he studied had optical anomalies, and the greatest composers had ear degeneration. And what his point was is that in an area of an artist's greatest weakness, his eye problems, he has to focus more compensatory attitudes and to channel into the area of his weakness to then develop it into his asset. Or like Beethoven and Mozart had hearing problems, so they had to put extra focus on what they heard, and therefore they became the greatest composers. And so his point was is that our weaknesses actually become our assets, or as Paul said, when I'm weak, then am I strong. So I want to encourage people who are listening who feel depressed that his grace is sufficient for you. And if you struggle with depression, that is not necessarily a sign of weakness, because some of the strongest characters
went through it too. Exactly. Yeah. It shows, guess what it shows, dude? Ready for this? It shows that you are human. Yep. You're human.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You're human. You're human and imperfect, flawed, broken, in need of a savior. So, dude, I love that, man. I think that's an awesome way to end our conversation here today. One more time, though, please let people know. I know you got to get to a speaking engagement out in San Diego, dude. I might just head over there with you, man. Let's go, man. Let's go get some food. Let's go to the beach, bro.
And just surf, even though I don't know how to surf and skate. And
dude,
stuff.
Neither do I. Neither do I, bro. I'll fish. I'll bring some fishing poles.
All right, dude. You fish, and I'll try to surf, and I'll make an embarrassment out of myself. But I don't care, because the fear of man's a trap. So who cares?
Exactly.
We're just gonna send it, dude.
Exactly. But real quick before we go, what is the best way for people to connect with you? I'll make sure to put it in the details of this podcast for your book and for your social channels.
Thanks, homie. Yeah, literally everything can be found at my website, bencourson.com. So that's bencourson.com. And then, on Instagram, you can just type in my name, or you can look up Hope Generation anywhere. Hope Generation YouTube channel, Hope Generation app, Hope Generation radio show, our TV show as well. So, it's Hope Generation or bencourson.com.
Awesome, bro. I love you, man. I'm praying for your event tonight. Praying God speaks through you in an incredible way. Thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to doing it again. Hope you have a wonderful day, bro, and I will talk to you soon.
Jared, I love you so much. You're a legend. You're a boss. I'm so glad we're friends. Keep doing you. You have amazing greatness about you, and I can't wait to talk again, homie.
Love you, bro. We'll go fishing and surfing. We'll try to surf soon. All right. We'll see you later, dude.
All right, dude. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Cross and Culture with Jared Wilson. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. For more information about this show, visit convergepodcastnetwork.com. We also thought you might enjoy another Converge Network podcast called The Invitation with Luke Lazon. On The Invitation, Luke talks about the invitations we receive in life and how they can be opportunities to respond to something that will change the trajectory of our lives. Search for The Invitation with Luke Lazon in your favorite podcasting app.